Welcome to the Minivate King Podcast, episode 163. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
We're rocking it down here in Lakeville.
And Phil Wilson.
That's just an interesting cut you've chosen. I'm rocking, baby. Get the fist pump going, the hair flailing. Yeah.
And sticking your tongue out. We've got black and white face makeup on. And
yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Is Adam Curry the guest today on the podcast? Yeah. Yeah, really. Is that why you did the big hair song?
That's right. That's right. Our buddy Graham is off this weekend. And no, I've been actually searching for music. I've really, really gone through Music Alley. And I'm kind of reaching some limits there.
What was that selection?
It's called Dreamline by a band called Universal Domain, but it just came out in February of 2012. So the quality is really great.
There you go.
Anyhow, so how you boys doing?
Tim, thanks for Xing.
Super.
Tim, are you recovered from the overnight website challenge?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. So tell us what kind of how it went. What the vibe was. While you were, was it different this year? Was it more fun, less fun, more stinky? What was the?
I think the experience is about the same as it always is. You know, it was very well organized. They had, you know, pretty much everything thought out. They tried to keep it fun. But it's just a, 24-hour hackathon, basically. It's, that's hard to explain if you haven't done it.
Yeah, yeah.
But, we had a plan going in. We executed the plan. Some things worked, some things didn't. And, at the end, though, we delivered, I think, a really nice site for the nonprofit.
Well, hopefully we'll find that out sometime.
Okay, Phil. Yeah, so we are going to switch it over. There's some complexity, though, that's not due to us with their hosting, is slowing us down just a tad, which I have got to work out. They're running all their email through through the domain they want to move it to, which is different than their current domain. Mm-hmm. And in order for us to light the hosting element up, we have to break their mail server. So,
that's always tough.
And then redo it. So the subdomain has to be killed, and then we can get to the hosting and then set the subdomain for mail back up. So, so the timing of that may have some bearing, but last time I checked, only a couple of the sites were actually live.
Well, I had tweeted that on, I believe, Sunday, or I think it was Monday, and we had a little conversation with Mitch and Carl from Full Court WordPress, and we were talking about that. I still believe there needs to be a rule in the overnight website challenge that it has to be live to be considered a winner. And if it's, and I also think that, obviously one of the issues there is, a lot of the nonprofits won't necessarily be ready. Well, it seems to me that if a nonprofit really wants this, they'd be willing to go that mile. And that might help with the process of weeding out and narrowing down the field of nonprofits that investigate or that invest their time in it. So, I don't know. I just think it to really be a website, it has to be on the web and accessible. And I really believe that that's an opportunity that they really ought to take advantage of. And that's a challenge.
Well, indeed it is. And, if you look at the four finalists, all of those should be live because they were fully realized sites and they were all built on top of, pretty much unmodified CMSs.
And that's true. And, I got a tweet from somebody at TST that said the site had actually, it was on the web. It just wasn't accessible at the time. It was, when they finished it on Sunday, but if it's not public, it's not a website.
Well, but at the same time, you go into the challenge with a current website, and sometimes it takes a while for the DNS to propagate. So
sure, I understand that.
So even if you say, at 9 o'clock in the morning, you said, okay, we're done, and you start propagation, doesn't mean that the site's going to be live.
So no, but it would usually be live by the end of the day. So
well, and I saw a comment, and I'll find the comment on the Nerdery site, but it was about the judging. And this guy's position was, it's an overnight website challenge, not an overnight website competition. And he said the challenge is we don't know really what the judging criteria is to win.
Yep.
And also that it's kind of missing the point. The point is to have the experience and to help the nonprofit. And he said, you know, it's more like a marathon where just participating and finishing, you win. And
I totally agree with that comment. I mean, it does feel deflating at the end when you think you've done a really nice job. And yeah, there's problems with it. But everyone has problems with the sites. And to not be recognized is an issue. But at the same time, you lose sight of the fact that you didn't do it to win.
I mean, right.
Everyone's competitive and everyone wants to be recognized. And it feels good when you are, let me tell you from personal experience. But it gets away from the whole judging and winning part of the challenge gets away from why we do it. And I think that was his main point was right. either do away with the judging altogether or, you know, provide some transparency because the judging this year was very different. You could tell.
Well, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I my concept of being live at the end of the challenge is obviously less important at that point. But I guess, if you're going to have judging, there is that competition that comes to the top. So, but you're right. I mean, all this of being live or not live does pick nits when you think about the overall viewpoint of what the website challenge is about.
I think everybody should get a trophy.
Everybody should get a trophy.
Oh, thank you.
You know, just like soccer. Yeah.
Just for participating. Yeah, yes.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Actually, I was more disappointed I didn't win one of those iPads.
Oh, okay.
There was two of them. I kind of had a two in one at whatever, 100 and some odd, 180 chance.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I was mad that I didn't win Mega Millions, but it was only a one in 175 million chance.
Oh, well. There's always next time.
Yeah, that's right.
No, but I am anxious to see the YPC site just simply because, well, because you're a friend and I'd love to see your work, but also, I'd love to see what the final result was. So,
I think it's the best output of the team yet. In thinking back on why we were in the top four last year, it had a lot more to do with the video that we produced than it had with the site itself.
Because
that site had some problems going into the judging and we covered them well, I thought, but there were major functionality problems. There were all sorts of issues with that. And I was very concerned going into judging and we come out, we're in the top four, and I think that's a major criterion because, half of the judges are nonprofits. So they want something that's unique and different and that will make a difference for the nonprofit. So I think that video really did. And, others did over and above that were in the top two, either documentation or some sort of content that made it different. And then, this year, I think design was a lot more important than it's ever been the 3 years that I've competed, probably because Dan Grigsby wasn't there. I think if Dan was there judging, some of the technical things that were pulled off would have been recognized. And that's one of the things that we took away from it was we did a bunch of custom functions and a bunch of plugins that really didn't need to be done. I mean, if you look at who, quote, wins or is recognized in the competition, it's teams that really do a nice job with design and really spend a lot of time with that design and not really doing anything custom. And I think, we're this way too ambitious and we do lots of custom really geeky things that just went unrecognized this year completely.
Well, one of the things I'm curious about is because of the obvious power and need to be accessible from mobile devices, how important was a criteria of responsive design or of mobile access to a site?
I thought it was very important. All four sites and our site too, all the four that were in the top, they're all responsive.
Okay.
But it seemed to me like it was table stakes. When we talked about responsive, the judges were not impressed.
Got it.
So, and if you looked at the the other two judges that weren't nonprofits, they were both from a design standpoint. So they're into responsive, and I think their attitude was, oh, that's great. That's just expected. It's sort of like a checkbox. Yep.
Yep. Got it.
So if you didn't do responsive, you were at a real disadvantage.
Got it. Okay.
Who were the top four? I don't think I saw that.
I would have to
go back and look.
I can't remember. I remember the sites. I just don't remember the names of the teams.
What were the sites?
Francona Sculpture Park was one.
Okay.
And that was a Expression Engine. One of two in the final four that were Expression Engine.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
That'll make Randy Geis feel good.
Yeah, no, I thought he would definitely feel good about that and give us some crap.
Yeah.
Let's see, what was the other team? Of course, the team that won.
Yep, TST, which is
just the TST team, which is the team with the funny name. What was it? Something about unicorns and moons. Yeah,
two unicorns and one moon or something like that.
Right, right.
Oh, we can put something in the show notes.
Sure.
So we'll do that.
Okay. Right. Yeah. No, I would have to look at all the sites again to figure out who they were. But I remember that two of them were Expression Engine. One is, of course, that the TST, whatever, engine thing. Yeah. And then the other one, I think, was WordPress, although they didn't say what the CMS was. But they didn't do anything to it. It was just very, very stock looking. But nice design.
Yeah.
All four of them, very nice designs.
Very nice designs.
Excellent designs.
So what do you think will be the challenge for you next year?
We've learned a ton as far as what to do. And I think that the challenge will be to scope the minimum required to please the nonprofit. And I mean by minimum, I mean absolutely the minimum effort that will give them the functionality and the design that they need. And then if we have time, add stuff. So, do the scoping, figure out what you want to do, and then really bring it down to what is the minimum I can do. And that it would be nice to have it done 12 hours before, and then have 12 hours to say, okay, all right, now we can add this special whiz bang thing here, over here and over there. Because I think it's important to, I agree with you, Phil. I think it's important to have a fully done site, fully baked, ready to roll. Whether it's online or not is another story, but it can be on a staging site, let's say, but available on the open internet and ready to go. So I think that is an important element, and I would hope that we would be there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I noticed that you, Tim, put in the show notes that the Nerdery released a JSON accelerator.
Yeah.
Tell us about that and why that's important.
Well, I think it's important because it saves developers a lot of time. And this is one of these really super geeky tools. JSON is a JavaScript object notation interchange format. And so basically this tool is sort of like a notebook that allows you to put all of your code in one place and make it very convenient to organize things.
I understand that from their press release that basically shrinks potentially 6 hours worth of time down to an hour.
That's
for certain
said.
Kinds of coding. Yeah.
So it's a great tool. It's $5, available in the App Store. If you're a developer, I think you'd really get into it.
Yeah.
I noticed Ruby wasn't on that list though, as far as code. Am I wrong on that?
No, you're not. Yeah. But I think it's because does Ruby use JavaScript?
PHP.
PHP.
So maybe the PHP nerds did it. Well, there was a Ruby group though, Ruby.mn.
Yeah.
Maybe the challenge.
Yeah. The challenge.
Yeah. The challenge.
And then I meant for the accelerator.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't think it.
Yeah, because if you're not using JavaScript, using a tool that helps you with JavaScript organize and deploy is not going to help you.
Right. Probably not.
If the language doesn't support it, I don't know. I'm not that up on Ruby, so
I'll tell you though, I'm not that up on languages in general. So
yeah, well, I'll tell you with the acceleration of HTML5, that some of the stuff that's going on with JavaScript is pretty exciting. And I think we're going to see a lot more of these sorts of tools.
Yeah. So, it's good to see the nerdery, you know, putting out tools for coders.
Yeah. Yeah. You know?
So other big story of the week.
Oh, is it ever?
It? I think it was like RIM's reporting, wasn't it? Yeah, I think it was RIM. And
oh, I thought you were going to go to Best Buy. Get him.
I am just kidding.
It's a similar story, right?
Yeah, it's a similar story. Somebody give me something to put out these flames.
Well, it's actually a similar story because they're both trying to cut their way to you know, to whatever the next thing is, you know?
Well, I mean, I was just kidding because the Best Buy story is clearly the most important, especially to us here in Minnesota and how it'll go. And so the question is, yes, 50 stores are closing. 400 people will be laid off. They're opening smaller stores. They're changing their footprint. Is it aggressive enough?
No, I don't think so. I think this is just rearranging deck chairs.
Well, I think they're going to get more aggressive, in my humble opinion. Well, I think this is just the start. Are they going to, or they have to? Well, I think they're going to, and I think they have to, because if you go through some of these articles, because I haven't gone through every one of them, there's maybe 10 links here, and we'll put them in the show notes. But if you go through and you actually read most of these articles, it's pretty clear that this is just the beginning, that they're really going to continue to reorganize and until they get to that sweet spot of where they need to be. And I think it's a great strategy to open these smaller stores. Because when you walk into a typical big box Best Buy store, you know, we've talked about this before, about all of the floor space devoted to media. I've stopped even buying Blu-ray discs.
So are we going to start walking into basically Ultimate Electronics now? I mean, because that's basically what it'll be. It'll be a smaller footprint store. It'll be Ultimate Electronics,
but without the stereos.
Without the stereos and a lot of freezers and appliances.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's basically, I think, what it's going to be. But I think they've got to really beef up the services end and do things that Amazon and other online retailers really can't do, because they have all these stores and all over the place. And they could certainly, you know, change their business by adding a lot more services inside the stores. It certainly works for Apple.
That's the one thing you don't notice in any of the press, at least on this, is where's the investment in training employees?
Well, I think they do a lot of training, but here's my biggest issue is I think this all boils down to two words, and these two words have been used over and over and over again in online training or learning management systems and whatever. It's all about decision support. So what do you have to give people, especially, you know, if you're doing business analytics, what do you have to give to people to make a decision? And I would argue that one of their biggest issues is that people are doing their due diligence in advance. They're asking influencers or somebody that they think really knows, what should I buy? They decide on what to buy. They go to Best Buy. They see that, geez, I just looked that up on Amazon and I can buy it for $40 less. I don't need it today. And so they go home and they buy it on Amazon. And so Best Buy is really out of the loop in terms of decision support. So how do they change that?
By having the best pricing or by having exclusive products that aren't available on Amazon.
Right. But what about the decision support piece? So
but I'm not sure how important that is these days, really. Because the assumption is if you're in a store, they're going to try to sell you something, right? Not necessarily try to get you to buy or help you buy something that is exactly right for you. They want to sell you whatever.
You know? But see, that doesn't work anymore.
No, I know. So I'm not sure if decision support with real humans in a store is going to be a winning strategy, because, you know, people are using smartphones and other means to make their decisions. They're a lot more connected. So I think that it would be better to have a really nice app or store or online thing where if you're in the store, it recognizes that and it helps you find what you're looking for.
Yeah.
I think it's some location aware app would be really a really good idea. And if you wanted help, just like you do at the Apple store, you click a little button and someone shows up spookily quickly to help you.
Well, so I'll just give you one example. So I had a friend that had one Apple Airport Extreme. And he was going to buy an external drive to hook up to it so he could use it as a backup. And I said, well, you know, you should really update that Extreme anyway because the new one has dual band. And oh, by the way, you could buy a time capsule for less money than you would buying a new Airport Extreme and an external drive. And then we got to talking, and here's the punchline. The punchline is he ended up with a new time capsule, 2 terabyte, and 3 Apple Airport Expresses. And then I went over and helped him hook up his network. Now, the only reason I'm bringing that up is because he didn't even know what he was missing. And he said, you know, could I do this? Could I do this? This is what I really want to do. And just by listening to him talk about that, you know, he ended up buying, you know, another $300 worth of product. And then obviously I had to go over and help him hook it up. But in the case of a Best Buy, understanding that whole space and then maybe, you know, connecting up the Geek Squad and the Geek Squad comes out for an hour and hooks it all up. That potentially turned a, you know, a $250, $300 sale or whatever the Airport Extreme or the time capsule is into potentially a $600 to $700 sale. And so I look at stuff like that and I think it's because people don't even know it's possible. And I think that's really where they're missing the boat. Because if you're just going to go buy a piece of something, you can just buy it from Amazon. You don't need to go to Best Buy because the people don't know any more than, you know, Joe Average, who's doing a blog. And so there's really no added value there.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously we don't have the answers. Otherwise we'd be CEO of Best Buy.
Yeah,
but
I don't think the CEO of Best Buy knows the answer, but they're certainly going to try different things.
Yeah.
And hopefully one of them works out. I just have never seen a change in a business where we're cut. You know, you can't
cut your way to profitability.
You can't shrink your way into success. Yeah, although they do have
short term. You can, yes,
they have to pivot their model. So I'm not saying this is totally wrong. And I think that the whole, you know, Best Buy mobile thrust is a good idea.
Tim wins for including buzzword. He wins for including the biggest buzzword of the year. Pivot.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's what they're trying to do. I just, you know, we'll see. I hate to have a negative attitude, but I just don't see any of this stuff as being the, you know, all that they need to do. So hopefully Steve's right that this is the beginning. They're going to continue to innovate, change things, and we'll be talking about them in the future as, you know, successfully navigating these tough waters.
Yeah. But the most important thing of the story, Tim, the Lakeville store is closing.
Really? It is?
Yep.
Well, that's a bummer. But of course, we've got that one over in
Apple Valley.
There's an Apple Valley store and there's another one in Burnsville they're going to move it from weird location that it is now to where the Circuit City store used to be. That's been a giant
behemoth sitting there, nothing.
Or right by the freeway.
You know, that seems like it's just as awkward to get to, though, doesn't it?
It is, but you find yourself on that road a lot more than you find yourself, you know, that far down.
Well, not unless you're buying lights. You're buying lights there over.
All right, whatever.
Anyway. So,
this is too much inside baseball for South of the River.
Thank you. Well, yes. And yes, I believe we need to serve South of the River a little bit more and tell stories about South of the River. Well, the things that happened down here.
The Lakeville store, it was never very busy.
Never.
Every time I've ever been in the store, it was always very unbusy. And what's really good is if you go there on Black Friday, all the stuff is there. You don't have to get up super early either.
Nope.
Just go in there because just not a lot of people know about it.
It was tucked way back in there. Nothing ever grew up around it.
Wow.
That's right.
Well, speaking of people selling stuff online, another big story from last
week.
Nice segue. Thank you, Phil.
But
was Google potentially selling tablets direct.
Yep.
This is, I personally think this is really huge. And it's huge because once again, there's a potential they may do what Amazon's doing, which is essentially subsidizing the price. Amazon's subsidizing the price of the Kindle Fire to sell more stuff, to be an on-ramp to everything they sell. In the case of Google, having the tablet potentially would be underwritten by advertising access to those tablets. What do you guys think about that?
Well, that's the only way that they're going to be able to compete with the iPad is to do it on price. The only other tablets that have been successful have done, that's what they've done. Yeah. So that's the right strategy. I think that they need to continue to emphasize the smaller form factor, so the 7-inch and the 8-inch, as opposed to the, you know, 10-inch, because that's a unique thing. And some people just don't like how big the iPad is. And so a smaller form factor is a good thing.
Seriously? Really? I have never heard anybody complain that the iPad is too big.
Well, now that I have a Verizon connection, it's really hard to get into my pocket. I've been pushing it in there, but it's ripping my trousers.
Thing. It's not a pocket. Yeah.
No, I mean, I think a 7-inch tablet could be a lot more portable than in the 10-inch.
I disagree.
But the real problem that they have is that they don't have any apps. So that's where Google really needs to invest, is to sponsor app developers to develop really good apps for it. Until they do that, they're not going to be successful no matter what the price is. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, they'll sell them to some geeks and some other people that that may not want to spend as much as $500 to get into an iPad. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, both Barnes & Noble and Amazon have pretty much, they've captured that market. So, you know.
Well, I'll tell you one thing.
It'll be like a incremental thing with Google in it, you know, at the same prices.
Well, I'll tell you one thing is that having done a lot of due diligence on the education space around iPads because of a client of mine, there's no question that K-12 is loving Google Apps for Education, and they're using it on the iPad, obviously. But the key is now is that you can share Google Docs, for example, with someone else without them having a Google account. So you can share it to any email address. And as a consequence, what's end up happening is that educators are putting together resource documents with links in it and sending that around. And now we're starting to see a little bit of curriculum being delivered that way with links to other resources and so on. Some really, really interesting things going on. So I look at the potential that exists for Google to have an integrated Android tablet experience that could potentially really materially change adoption into certain places like K-12 education.
Yep. Well, it's currently an opportunity, but no one's been able to exploit that. So, you know, Google as the first party, and after they acquire Motorola, they'll be able to actually build their own. So they'll be a lot more integrated like Apple is.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that'll be an important thing. And then the next thing after that is, will there be Google stores? Well, you go to the Mall of America and right next to the Apple and Microsoft store is a Google store. And there'll probably be an Amazon store too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Google store be very much like that As Seen on TV store that there is out there? So they would be selling just stuff that you see on Google.
Yeah, I guess. No, they'd be selling Google T-shirts.
And Google little Android robots and
Google tablets and maybe some phones.
Yeah.
Maybe some of those Chromebooks.
So, Tim, we hadn't really talked about this before, but, you know, it's time for an upgrade for me on my phone plan. And I was just kind of curious, what would you recommend for phones these days?
I haven't looked at the phone market in a long time. I guess the Galaxy Nexus is the greatest thing since sliced bread in the Android side. And of course you've got the iPhone, I mean, I don't have that available on T-Mobile, but you certainly on Sprint could go either direction.
The Galaxy Nexus, though, is just, you're talking about that large job. That thing's just a
little. Yeah, I think it's almost 5 inches.
Almost 5 inches. That's too big. It's just, it's because ultimately I do want to keep it in my pocket, not, you know, have it, you know, slapped to the side of my belt or something like that. Though that is, that does let your geek flag fly when you do that.
Well, that is one of the advantages of Android over the iPhone is that it's not one thing. It's, you know, if you want a 5-inch phone, you can get a 5-inch phone. If you want a 2.8-inch screen on the phone, you can get one of those too. I mean, it's all over the place. It's not just one size fits all. So, so if you have special requirements for, say, a 4-inch phone, so I think that would be something that would be good to have a little extra real estate, but still have it be where you could operate with one hand. You can only find that with right now anyway, with the, on the Android side.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So here's a question. You mentioned it, Tim, about the Chromebook. Is that thing getting any traction whatsoever? Does anybody know anything about, I mean, are there any numbers published anywhere?
Yeah.
I haven't seen anything. And it's gotta be one of those education things would be a natural for it, I would think.
Yeah.
But if you look at them for, if you're just an individual and you look at them, there's just no, there's no value proposition. It's the same price as what you'd pay for a laptop. So why not just get a laptop? You can do it whatever you want. And if you want to run a Chrome, quote, Chromebook, just run Chrome on it.
Yeah.
But if you want to run Microsoft Word, then you can do that too. So, yeah, unless they're going to be like super cheap, or it's going to be like a cell phone where you sign up for a plan and, you know, you pay for it by the month. And you don't have to outlay $300 or $400 or $500 for the thing at the beginning. I don't think it's going to ever be a success. Especially now where, you know, pretty much for mobile, all these tablets are really kind of replacing the laptop.
Well, you know, one of the things that I've been thinking about with all of these changes, especially with everything mobile, but even with the Mac App Store, and then now thinking about the Chromebook and being able to go onto the Chrome web store and download all these quote unquote apps that can then populate your browser window before you go anywhere. Mm-hmm. It's so seamless and easy to buy right now. And the price points are dropping. And so I remember talking to somebody about this quite some time ago, maybe 8 or 10 years ago, about, do you remember going into computer store and buying shrink wrapped software? And I don't know anybody that goes in and buys shrink wrapped software anymore at all.
I don't think it's even available anymore, is it?
Well, yeah. I mean, you can still like walk into the Apple store, for example, and buy Mac, you know, top titles for Mac software and so on. But
really, you can't? I thought that
they
canned all that stuff because you could just go to the App Store.
Well, not all the apps are available on the App Store. Oh. So, I'm just wondering, you know, if that, you know, is simple retail over? I mean, is it? Are we going to shift more and more to anything that can be distributed by bits or even anything that can be ordered online being so easy and simple to do that you just push a button when you want something?
What was the question again?
Is simple retail over?
Well, what do you mean by simple retail?
Simple retail. What does that mean?
You walk into a bricks and mortar store. You decide what you want. You lay down your credit card and you leave. Right. I mean, today you can walk in and you've got, everybody looks to Apple's Genius Bar and emulating that. So you walk into Apple and you can sit and chat with people. And if they don't know the answer to something, they can go to the smarter people there. And if those people don't know, they have a hotline they can use to call, not during the weekend, but during the week. And they can find out answers on things. And so you get all that and then you can buy something, but now you can use an app on your phone to buy right there and just walk out of the store. You don't even need to talk with a human. It's because you have this account with Apple and they have your credit card. And so you buy through the iOS app store, the Mac app store, you actually walk into the bricks and mortar store and you just put something in your pocket and you ring it up and you walk out. And so that's definitely complex made simple. But I look at Best Buy, getting back to them, is they don't have the best price. And so they're not educating, informing, and supporting the consumer. They're just selling stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's simple retail. And so, you know, is it just over? Is just simple retail dead?
No.
Because there are some places where you have to, you know, where you want to buy a physical product. You know, you go to Kohl's and you want to buy a shirt, you know?
Yeah.
All right. That's where this whole Apple iPhone, you take a picture of something and it brings you up thing kind of falls apart. Is, are they going to license that to places? Will I be going to Chipotle in the future and I take a picture of my burrito and it somehow charges me for it?
Probably not.
You know? Well, maybe. I don't know.
Well, but I also look at the fact that I really appreciate the ability to walk in and pick up something and touch it and feel it. I mean, I've been looking for a new messenger bag, and I've seen several online that look really interesting. And yesterday I was at Micro Center and I picked up one that I'd seen online, and I thought, there's no way I'd buy it. It looked like crap. And so, you know, to that point, me being able to touch it, feel it, put it through its paces, I think is extremely important.
Right. And then you pull out your iPhone and you dial up the Amazon store to check the pricing.
Yeah.
Right. Using Micro Center's free Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Well, there's that.
And you order it.
Yeah. I do buy a lot from them, though, because I really appreciate that they know so doggone much. They got so many geeks there.
Yeah. My daughter calls it the nerd herd.
Yeah. Well, that's about it, too.
That's as close as we have to Fry's.
Oh, well, I like it. I like it.
Town, yeah.
You think?
Yeah. No, it's good. I like it. I like it better than Fry's. Whenever I go to California, go to Fry's. I mean, I don't know. It's good. Don't get me wrong.
It's great.
The selection of stuff at Fry's is great. I don't like the guys on the floor, though. The guys on the floor at Micro Center are much better. So.
But they're great.
Yeah.
They're great.
Yeah.
And I saw Tim there this week. So.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, isn't that the height of geekiness? Is when you meet your friends at Micro Center? Isn't that the height?
No, absolutely.
I love it. But so what, you know, this Patagonia messenger bag I'm using is pretty nice. Have you checked one of those out, Steve?
Well,
it's
it's
a simple bag, very simple bag.
Yeah. I'd actually picked one up and someone said, "Miss, can I help you?" Cause it was kind of girly. So, yeah, I know.
That was a hilarious joke.
No, I haven't.
Was that a joke or was that reality?
Yeah, I pointed out it was a joke. That's how bad
okay.
it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
We love you, Steve. You know
that. So I don't know about your simple retail question.
I think simple retail is, it works in some places, it doesn't work in others, in other lines. I mean, maybe it's becoming a more niche thing. Maybe the big box concept is over. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, all I know is
I don't think you want to tell that to Walmart because they're still building huge stores.
Yep.
Or Target. I love a tweet by a guy that I follow who said when the iPad 3 was announced, the new iPad, he said, why doesn't Apple just automatically take $900 out of my credit card every quarter?
Yeah, I saw that too.
Yeah, I thought that was just hilarious. Just take it out.
They could start the Apple loyalty club and automatically, it's like a wine club, right? They just mail you whatever they've got every quarter.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? That'd be a good idea. You know?
No, I wanted just to mention something that I forgot to mention at the beginning. Graham and I were at the Jamf software announcement of their new product on Wednesday. And for those that don't know Jamf, JAMF, I'll put a link in the show notes, they make software to manage Macs and iOS devices. They're Apple-centric. And what they can do is pretty stunning in terms of management of all these devices and configuring mass numbers of them and so on. Now that education is buying iPads in droves, one of the things that they've done is they've mastered how to get eBooks, EPUB, and iBooks onto the iPad in several different ways. And the most complex way has two steps for the admin. And they've basically automated the whole thing. It's pretty incredible. And so I'll put a link in the show notes if people want to go poke around and look at it. But quite an event. And they're upstairs from Coco Minneapolis in the Grain Exchange building on the 10th floor. Mm. And pretty cool company.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So there's other events coming up this week as well. We've got a good slate. Actually, a week from today's recording is Mini Bar.
Yeah.
So that's always a great time. I wonder how many people this year.
I'm going to guess 750.
Oh, it's going to be more than that. They've had more than 1,000 before. Yeah. It's going to be 15, I bet.
Didn't I say 1750? Oh, yeah. Damn, I'll have to edit that.
You're on today. You're just quick today. Well, except for that Patagonia joke. But other than that,
yeah.
What else is coming up? We've got, there's another cloud meetup at Stratus, right?
On the 10th.
On the 10th. It's at the local.
At the local. Oh, nice.
Sweet.
Yeah. That's a nice it place. Is.
Yep. Yep.
Mini WebCons coming up the 16th and 17th. I noticed the Geek Girls are there again. They just did social media breakfast yesterday. So I bet you they're feverishly trying to put together a new presentation.
Oh.
So.
Well, that'll be good. Leif Larson is doing a SaaS class, Software as a Service Smarts, as a camp on April 21st. It's a Saturday.
SaaS camp.
SaaS camp, yep.
This sounds wrong. I don't know why.
SaaS camp?
Yeah.
Well, don't you be sassing at me, Tim.
I was going to say, I think my daughter's been to that camp.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Then MHTA Spring Conference on the 25th.
Right.
And it'll be really interesting because now that the new leader of MHTA,
she's got two last names. Kelleher something or other, right?
Margaret Kelleher.
Right.
She's been in that saddle now for about a year, and it'll be interesting to see how this spring conference is different than previous ones. So looking forward to that. Who put in this predictive analytics forum in the show notes?
Graham did remotely from, wherever he's at.
Okay. That looks pretty interesting. Speakers include Robert Stevens.
Mm-hmm.
The IO Festival at the Walker, and then Tech Masters.
Yeah, I saw this as well. Tech Masters is a basically division of Toastmasters, and it helps more tech startup, you know, for lack of a better word, geeky sort of folks, helps them, you know, do better presentations, feel more comfortable in front of people, you know, that sort of a thing. So I found that interesting. It looks like they meet weekly too.
That's really a great addition to this because, boy, I tell you what, anybody standing up and pitching investors or if they do get an opportunity like Leif Larson did at Demo to stand up on a stage in a very high-pressure environment in front of, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people, something like this would be invaluable.
It's what I thought. That's what kind of why I grabbed it. It was like, this is – somebody's finally doing this. This is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then April Fool's Day is tomorrow, and it's Phil Wilson's birthday.
It's so true.
Happy birthday in advance, Phil.
Please feel free to shower me with gifts.
We will. Golden showers not preferred.
Hey!
Oh, hey. Oh. Woo.
Hey, now that one just off the other
But day. I'm sure he's got his AARP card by now.
Yeah. Now, I haven't gotten my mailing yet, you know, for the year.
All right, it's coming.
Usually I've been getting those for 3 years or 2 years now. So I'm looking forward to my next one.
That's right.
These days I'm going to join because I want to get that discount at Denny's.
Are they even open anymore?
Sure. Well, they are.
Yeah. Grand Slam. Come on.
Grand Slam breakfast. Come on.
Get with it.
Boy, I hope I'm never too old to enjoy a Denny's breakfast.
obviously Steve is not taking an extended road trip recently.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, man. Well, you know what? I would like to do what I... Well, guess what? Have you guys heard of Comic-Con?
Yes.
Yeah.
So my 17-year-old is
Comic-Con. Who are you talking to here?
Well, hey, I don't know. I don't know how geeky and nerdy you guys truly are. Well, so my son and I are going to San Diego in July to go to Comic-Con.
Yeah.
And he's got a buddy who's got a dad out there, and so we're going to connect up with those guys. But it is absolutely an incredible geek fest. And so that ought to be interesting.
Comic-Con, who do you have any idea who some of the dignitaries are going to be at Comic-Con?
Yeah, they've got a whole list of you know, comic artists and writers and all this stuff. I have no clue whatsoever who any of these people are. And I talked to my son. He's like, oh, yeah, well, this guy, you wrote blah, 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 blah. And then he did this. And boy, talk about feeling totally out of it. But then they also do a lot of shows that are there. Mm-hmm. And so we see some of that. But I'm doing it for him. I mean, he's graduating from high school, and he's always wanted to go, and he's always been bugging me, and thought, okay, let's go.
I think that's wonderful. You guys
love it. Very nice.
Yeah.
That's an experience right there.
Yeah, it should be good.
So where is that, Steve?
San Diego.
San Diego. That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, San Diego doesn't suck anytime you go to visit there.
So. True. There's one in the East Coast, too. So that I want to say Atlanta or New York. One of the.
Yeah, I think it's New York, but the one to go to is in San Diego.
It's in San Diego. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. I'm sure there'll be lots of Game of Thrones folks there.
I'm sure. Because
it's, you know, it's not just the comics. They have all the, you know, all the fantasy folks.
So you'll be able to, you know, maybe get into a pickup game of World of Warcraft or Magic the Gathering or something like that.
All I can say is I'll have my bag and my iPad with Verizon. And if it gets really bad, I can go sit in a corner and let him walk around and I can surf the net for an hour or two.
Yeah. Keep your eyes out for those Princess Leia in the gold bikini costumes. Those are always fun.
Yeah. Except that's over. Anyway. Thanks, everyone.
How can that be over?
It's never over.
Every fantasy right there. I mean,
the slave Leia.
Oh, God.
Slave Leia. That's, I guess I hadn't really heard that.
Right. She's Jabba's the slave.
That's right.
I didn't realize that really makes it hot, doesn't it?
I wonder what that's going to look like in 3D. That's going to be Jabba's lair. That's going to be crazy. That's all I gotta say.
That's all I gotta say.
What is that? Episode 6. We gotta wait years and years before.
Years for that. Yeah.
3D, because they're on episode 1 right now.
Yeah, maybe they'll be into 4D by then.
Ooh. Oh, geez. All right, boys. Let's wrap her up. Everyone, thanks for listening to the Minute of 8 Gig podcast.
Next time.
Take care.